All right. I am joined again by my favorite Tico, Eddie Mendez of CRC Football. Eddie, how are you? First and foremost, you sound a lot better than last week, which obviously you had a little bit of a froggy throat. So I'm so glad you're sounding better this time around.
I'm sounding better, not so much looking better, but definitely feeling better.
Sorry, I looked down because my dog is like moving like it's a Scooby-Doo cartoon, just like spinning her nails on the floor. So sorry about that. No, I'm so glad you're feeling better, but maybe not as well as you wish. Obviously, brought you back on to talk about Saprissa once again last week. A freak goal and a lot of missed opportunities, or I should say a freak own goal and a lot of missed opportunities for Saprissa really probably told the tale of the game. But I want to ask you, from your perspective as a Saprissa supporter, Saprissa fan, or if you want to take the neutral route, someone who's just very knowledgeable on Costa Rican soccer, what did you see from that game in terms of Saprissa towards the Union? What did you see from that game? What went right? What went wrong? Just give it to us.
Yeah, I think, you know, you walk away from that result, you have to feel disappointed. Definitely in the first half, it felt like Saprissa had the opportunity to really grab this tie by the throat. And then you look at Yoseth Hernandez skying one over the bar, Warren Madrigal unmarked on the far post on a corner kick. Those two opportunities, you know, fall by the wayside. But then, you know, the Union kind of gave it back to us on that own goal. And watching the debates between whose fault that was fantastic throughout the course of the game. I don't care. I'll take the goal. They don't ask you how many. I mean, they don't ask you how. They ask you how many. So to get that one was good. But, you know, really in the second half, that's when kind of what I was speaking about last week started to come into play and what my fears were, where the first, I say 10 minutes, you felt the Union was starting to kind of swing the momentum, kind of dictate the tempo of the game a little bit. And then that ultimately culminates in three unanswered goals before we pull one back. So, you know, when you look at the first half, you could walk away from that first half saying that we deserve better. But I think tactically what you saw over the course of the 90 minutes was a coach that got outcoached and wasn't really prepared for how the Union were going to respond and how ultimately that system was going to take over that 4-3-3 that Vladimir did not want to move on from. So I think disappointing in the result and disappointing from the coach.
And we'll talk about Vladimir a little bit more as having attended both press conferences for the game tonight in terms of listening to Jim and Quinn Sullivan and listening to Vladimir and Kendall. Very telling that there's a lot of heat towards Vladimir, which obviously South American press a lot more. It's very different than what you would see from a press pool here in the United States for MLS. But nonetheless, you can start to sense maybe some I don't know, bending and maybe getting to the point where it's breaking. But we'll talk more about Vladimir. So to your point in terms of a coach being outcoached, talk to us about what all went wrong in terms of the formation, because you and I talked about it. And frankly, as I saw you tweet throughout the match, I'm thinking to myself, why isn't this guy on the sideline? Because Eddie called it. You know, you were very open during our first conversation of, I implore Vladimir to not do this if the Union come out this way. And he did exactly what you suggested for him not to do. Talk to us a little bit more about the tactical side on what went wrong for Saprissa right from the get-go, honestly, and just not making any adjustment throughout the 90.
Yeah, so the Union system, the way they kind of utilize it, trying to take away your center backs and your six in the build, that's why it's really designed to destroy that 4-3-3, because you have those matchups right there in front of you. And early on, you see them deploy it. Saprissa would counter it a little bit. Mariano would drop deeper in the build out. So now you have more of a little double pivot. So now that 10 that's marking the six, you know, has a little bit more nuance to deal with and has to make more decisions. So there's a lot of moving pieces that work into that. The reason why I didn't want the 4-3-3 was because you have a team that has more talent and a system that's designed to destroy you. Eventually it's going to play out that way. So by going to a different formation, ideally it would have been the 3-4-3. It would have been a numbers game. At that point, the nines have one more center back to deal with, and the 10 has one more midfielder to deal with. And I think Vladimir, you know, either didn't do his homework or thought that he could kind of take advantage of the Union not really being in in midseason form. And in all honesty, the only reason why we're able to have a conversation about tonight's game being a thing is because I really feel like the Union not having a competitive fixture before that game really played into how that game turned out. Because I think if the Union are 2 months into the season, I think this is done and dusted already. So the Union not being, you know, sharp and that pressing system is very difficult to deploy if you don't have the reps, because you have to, you know, figure out different decision-making processes. You know, it made it a little bit easier for Saprissa to deal with. But, you know, when you look at the second goal that we conceded that was on the build-out, and that's when Mariano and Gerard Taylor are out wide, you know, you went in that area in that zone, and now you're able to transition forward. And then it's typical Union stuff. Attack the edges of the six and transition, simple cutback goals. Like, it's just the prototype. You know, if you're going to show the youth teams at the Philadelphia Union, hey, this is how we press, and then this is how we transition, and this is how we counter, that was the model right there. And it was everything that the Union system is designed to do. And for Vladimir not to realize that and not to adjust, knowing that you've already given up one goal, and the first goal we can account to Kendall Watson not being there. Because I think if Kendall Watson is there, then, you know, that aerial duel is not something that we're going to lose. And maybe we don't concede that goal. But the second goal was definitely the Union system destroying our build, which is what it's designed to do. And then the third goal, when you have those nines occupying my center backs and they're isolated in 1v1 situations and you get to hit them in transition, now what do you have on the backside? Basically a 3v2 or 2v2, 3v3 numbers that you feel comfortable with if you're the Union, and then they punish you on to get that third goal. So, you know, when I saw the lineup and people were asking me before, you know, how you think the game is going to go, I wanted to tell myself that Vladimir is not going to do this and he will adjust. And because of that, I think with the Union not being in form and being in La Cueva, the result will go our way. But for Vladimir not to make any adjustments, and I actually got excited when I saw Eduardo Anderson come on, because I'm telling myself, oh my God, he's going to go back three. He's going to go back. Nope. Eduardo Anderson playing the back, Fidel Escobar going to midfield. We're going to stay with the 4-3-3. We're going to ride this thing out. And then we give up another goal. So it's just like the inability or the stubbornness. I don't know what it is. You're either ignorant because you didn't want to do your homework and you thought that you could beat that system with the 4-3-3. Or you were just too stubborn and you decided that, hey, this is how we play. We're going to outplay them this way. Either way, it's a failure on Vladimir. And I think to be outcoached, this one, the result is solely on him.
You know, you talk about the rustiness or the lack of a competitive match. And of course, Jim Curtin will tell you this 9 out of 10 times. Well, we played against Flamengo and we played plenty of MLS teams leading into this match against Saprissa out in Costa Rica. But the reality is that the mixing and matching of players that the Union were doing, where, you know, even with the very last match against, was it New England or Cincinnati of the preseason, Jim was very open. It's like, well, there's going to be different guys. So we're going to get 45 minutes and those are probably going to be our starters. And then whatever for the first game of the season. Of course, it was not, it was so obvious that during that Saprissa match, the Union had, I think, two specific players in my eyes that had probably the worst games of their Union career so far. Jacob Glesnes, who obviously had a 50-yard own goal, and you could, again, like you're saying, sort of the debate both in Spanish television or the American broadcast, whose fault was it? Was it Blake or Glesnes? I would argue it's more of Glesnes than Blake, but neither here or there. But then also really rare to see a Jose Martinez match where he was probably the worst six I've ever watched in a long, long time. And that's a guy who gets in 9 out of 10 times, 10 out of 10 times to represent Venezuela. So really, really odd that despite two very poor performances from those two, the Union still somehow found a way to get out of La Cueva with a victory and allowing that second goal that still puts a lot of hope. I think Vladimir used that word when talking to the press this week, a lot of hope and wishing that, you know, maybe we can do this. And much to like what you said earlier, Eddie, Vladimir was very open about, listen, we could have finished this match in the first half of the first game, but we didn't. And I want to now talk about over the weekend, since we've met, since the Union and Saprissa met, Saprissa tied against Guanacasteca 0-0, despite being a man up for the last 15 or 20 minutes. A lot of substitutions. I think about five different bodies that came and went. Talk to me about if you watched that game or if you caught highlights or whatever, not many highlights if it was 0-0 and there was a red card, but what feeling does that draw have for you going into Subaru Park tonight for Saprissa?
Yeah, so I wouldn't read too much into the draw. For those not familiar with Costa Rican soccer, playing at Guanacasteca is one of the hardest away trips in all of Costa Rica. Number one, the distance that you have to travel, especially if you're more on the Atlantic side, going all the way to the Pacific, you know, it's a long ride. And then the conditions in Guanacasteca, the humidity, the heat, it's very difficult to play 90 minutes there. So Guanacasteca over the last couple of seasons, they don't lose that many games at home. I think they've only lost officially maybe one or two games. For the most part, it's draws or wins for them at home. So, you know, they're a well-coached team, and they play in a pretty tough condition. So I wouldn't read too much into that. I think the biggest thing that I took away from this weekend going into tonight, and again, it goes to my frustration, is that this was the game that Vladimir decided that he was going to deploy a back three. So maybe it's in preparation for tonight, but now you want to do it, right? You had all this time, all these months to prepare and do your homework. You don't want to go back three against the Union, but we'll do it away to Guanacasteca in between the first and the second leg. So he went with what was essentially a 3-4-1-2. He played Javon East as a central nine, as opposed to on the wing where I've seen him for most of the season. And then he played Paradela in that hole behind him. So, you know, my thinking is if he's deploying something similar today, number one, too late. But number two, it's going to be more what I'm thinking is, you know, not to allow the Union to destroy their build by outnumbering them with the center backs and the double pivot in midfield, but then putting more pressure on the Union's back line if they deploy a back four by having those two nines occupying the center backs and then having to deal with like a little roaming 10 in front. So, you know, with Kendall Watson coming back, I think you're able to do that. Over the weekend, they had to do it with Douglas Cicada, who I said before is not ready for this level, and Eduardo Anderson, who literally got his work permit the day of the first leg and then made his debut, his club debut. So, you know, he's not really into the mold yet. So he's not really match fit either. But I think you're able to do it with him, Waston, and Arboin as that back three. But, you know, it was good to see Vladimir make some adjustments. I think that game was more of a, you know, a test run for what was tonight. That's why I wouldn't read too much into that result.
So before we talk about Kendall, I want to maybe ask you about the bigger picture, right? You have Saprissa fourth in the Clausura. You also have them 9 points behind Herediano with 13 matches to go. Does tonight for Vladimir feel like a must win? I don't know how the mechanics or I guess the emotions and the business side, I guess, goes in Costa Rican soccer, but I would think that there's a lot of heat on his seat after sort of some of these performances and obviously the position that they're in. This is a club that wants to win, has to win, and will win. And right now that's just not happening.
Yeah, you know, it's part of the reason why I think I could never coach in Costa Rica. And if I did, I'd stay at an Airbnb because there's no guarantee you'll have a job, you know, 2 weeks out. I think what you're starting to see now is they're building the case for what could be his eventual departure. I don't think it would be tonight. It would have to be an embarrassing result. You would have to embarrass the country more so than you did against Real Esteli. But you would have to really have an embarrassing result for it to be an opportunity to be let go. I still think that the case is being built against him. So where if the results don't come in a month from now and they're still struggling third, fourth, and it feels like they don't have the locker room really, I think that's when you'll see more of a change. Today's really a must win because just for the state of Costa Rican football. Right. But I think for his job, I think it's secure for now. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is going to be like the last straw. And from here on out, there's no margin for error. I think that's kind of where we are in his timeline at Saprissa.
what counts as an embarrassment? I have an idea. I'm thinking a 4-0,
yeah,
5-0.
Una manita, something like
Yeah.
that. You know, it would have to take 4 or 5 nil, completely losing the plot, and then, you know, disgruntled veterans in the locker room speaking out after the game. Like it would have to get ugly. It would have to have, you know, a few more check boxes that you would have to account for other than just losing the game. If they lose the game, you know, I think a lot of people going into this result, going into this tie, myself included, weren't necessarily expecting them to advance. You know, but if they have a good showing, I think his job is still secure.
Not just you, Eddie. I mean, having listened to radio stations and whatnot, who appear on the press conferences, but also just sort of, you know, going on online radio and listening and talking sports radio, whatever. It's like, yeah, it really does feel like the media down there has already given up on this game. In fact, I think they even approached Jim Curtin and said, is there even a point to this game? Like, more or less just like asking, like, what is the reason that we're doing this? The Union are so good at Subaru Park. It has been a bit of a fortress. And I know that's the cliche that gets tossed around both in England, et cetera, but like, and even La Cueva, right? It's a team, it's a place where home field advantage is just so, so apparent and obvious, though I might argue that tonight may not feel that way in a way, just to sort of like, you know, paint the picture. Going to be 60 some degrees, but raining, 8:15 kickoff, which this fan base is used to, 7:30 most of the time on a weeknight. Kind of hard to see many bodies showing up. So I would love to be proven wrong to see 18,000 people strong, but frankly, I expect no more than maybe 10 or 12 tops. So it'll be really, really interesting to see what type of crowd shows up. So if we can shift gears, Eddie, to the man who seems to be making his return solely for this game, Kendall. During yesterday's press conference, the media asked Kendall, are you actually ready or are you forcing it to be present for this game? And maybe me reading too much into it and reading between the lines, is he trying to make an appearance to help Vladimir stay put? Or is this him genuinely being physically and mentally ready to be back at the game? Because his quote was, listen, I'm not the one who decides if I'm a starter. I'm not the one who decides how many minutes I'm going to get. I'm just here to do my best to support my teammates. I'll open it up to you, Eddie. Is Kendall even really ready?
Yeah, you know, he was on the bench this weekend in Guanacasteca, but he didn't play. So I would have felt more comfortable saying that he's ready had he come on 5-10 minutes. Even, you know, that game is 0-0 and they're down a man. One thing that they like to do is throw the big man up top and then let's lump it forward and let's see him win in the air. So they didn't even do that to kind of chase the 3 points in Guanacasteca. So that kind of gives me a little bit of hesitation to say that he's fully match fit. He's fully ready for this fixture. But, you know, give me Kendall Watson at 70% over Pablo Arbuen at 100%, over Eduardo Anderson at 100%, over Douglas Cicada, like any of those guys. Give me Kendall only because of the leadership that he has. But then, like, I go back to that first goal that we conceded. I don't think that's a goal we concede if he's there and instead of Fidel Escobar, because that's his forte. That's what he eats off of, is those aerial balls. So, you know, I think maybe he is rushing himself back for this fixture, and God bless him. But that, you know, that's kind of the leader that he is and kind of the warrior that he is. And that's why we love him at Saprissa and in Costa Rica in general. You know, I just hope that this doesn't go sour and it doesn't backfire, because he's going to be an important piece for the rest of the season. And to kind of risk it all for a game that kind of feels a little bit out of hand, maybe a little bit short-sighted for me.
If today does go sour, is there enough, and I'm asking beyond the Champions Cup for those listening, so skip 30 seconds, but if it goes sour tonight, it's an embarrassment, whatever. Is there enough time for Saprissa to turn around this ship for the Clausura, obviously being in fourth place, being so far down the pecking order in terms of the standings with the 13 games left? Is there enough time for this team to turn it around and salvage this first half of the season, or I guess the second half of the season?
I think so. You know, in Costa Rica, you win 2-3. I mean, it's kind of like MLS, right? You win 2-3 games in a row. All of a sudden, you're kind of back in the thick of it. So sure. I think that eventually talent will play itself out, and teams that maybe are overachieving right now, like a San Carlos, very young team. You know, that we have a rule in Costa Rica, you have to play under 21s X amount of minutes. They've already hit that mark by the ninth jornada, which is ahead of everybody. So, you know, how does a team like that respond when they're in a thick playoff race towards the end of the season? Does the pressure get to them? Whereas Saprissa, who's into a three-peat, more experienced, they've been there before. Like, I still think that they could hit that switch and go into it. The biggest thing for them is that they won't finish first. I don't think so. I think Heredia is flying right now. And in Costa Rica, if you finish first in the regular season, if you don't win in the playoff, you get a rematch with whoever does win the playoff. And that's called, that's how the Liderato works. So I think you're going to have to beat somebody four times, like in Heredia. I think that's where they might fall short, because Heredia is really talented. And I think last year had a better shot of beating Saprissa than what the results showed. But I still think that when you fast forward to the end of the season, Saprissa is going to be in the playoff. Maybe the first round matchup isn't favorable, but you're still going to consider them one of the favorites.
Okay. And that's, I think you being a Morado, I'm hoping the best for you and for the rest of the season. But shifting gears again back to tonight, what do you expect Vladimir to do in terms of a lineup? Because obviously, and again, not to continue to draw lines from his press conference, but it was very obvious. We have to win. We need to win. We have to attack. And that is music to Jim Curtin's ears, because the way that the Union have worked, though you could argue over the last two games, three games with the preseason and being considered, the Union have shown a very different type of play in terms of their chances and the goals that were called back over the weekend, featuring very crisp and thoughtful passing, crossing that's not coming off of a counter, scoring from open play, which has been a bit of a challenge for them in the past, really flipping the script. But when I think of Vladimir Quesada and what he has to do today in terms of his task and the team, Saprissa opening up is going to be just a field of play for the Union to take advantage of, especially if a Mikel Ua is out there, who's a, you know, route one type of runner and can just really punish you with the speed. How do you expect Quesada to take this game, both tactically and mentally? Maybe, I don't know. Try to get in his head.
I mean, I tried last time and bro didn't listen to me. So yeah, I tried to manifest it as much as I could. Bro was not listening to me. You know, I don't think you all of a sudden go 3-4-1-2-1-1 at Casteca for no reason in between these two legs. I think that was purposeful. So I would expect, you know, either a 3-4-3 or a 3-4-1-2, however he wants to deploy it. But his idea is going to be creating a numbers game and not allowing the Union to destroy their build and allowing them to essentially get them into those low blocks and try and break them down from there. I think the biggest issue that I see is going to be the transition game, and Kendall Watson not having his legs.
Right.
You know, I feel like those transitional moments are going to be crucial, because Kendall's critical defending is still one of the best in the country, even in his old age, but not having his legs underneath them, I worry about his ability to deal with them consistently. And if we're going to be able to kind of pin the Union back because we're playing a numbers game in the build out, and then we're looking to break them down, and then you're going to put Kendall in those situations on numerous occasions, I worry about his ability to handle them. I worry about Eduardo Anderson's ability to play at this level, because he's still being incorporated into the team. And I just don't rate Pablo Arbuin that highly. So, you know, I think the 3-2 lead really works in the Union's favor. If we have to really start pushing the game forward, I think that very early on we can get caught in transition, and we're kind of just going to go through the formality of the next, you know, 50, 60 minutes of the game. So that's my biggest concern overall, is that it's already too late. Any adjustment you make for tonight, it's already too late, because it was all there at La Cueva and you kind of just let it go. The only hope that will allow me to believe is how rusty the Union may be and how lackluster the environment is going to be. That's the only thing that we have to hold on to. And then what Heredia did at Toluca, and kind of using that as a little bit of inspiration. But in terms of what I see on the field, in terms of tactics, and just my analytical mind, I really don't see a way through for Saprissa.
Well, I'll give you some more hope here and let you believe a little bit more. Andre Blake confirmed to not start. Semsla is going to get the nod today in net. And Jim Curtin already has talked about this being a bit of a rotation game after a 2-2 draw against Chicago. So you could see some bodies coming in. I know he mentioned Jack Elliott, maybe replacing one of the center backs and maybe shifting the formation. I would think that the odd man out would be a Jacob Glesnes. Doesn't mean that they can't do a three in the back, but more likely with the pairing of Elliott and Lowe, you'd probably still see a four in the back. I would also probably envision that this is Nate Harriel's opportunity to take a seat and let Olivia and Baizo, who is just this dynamic, don't get me wrong, but Nate has really shown his growth over the last 2-3 years in terms of out of nowhere getting a U23 call-up for the national team. Then January gets a national team call-up for the senior team and continuing to have these really good performances. So long way to say, a lot of changes from what was seen in terms, I would imagine, 3 or 4 faces beyond Blake maybe being shifted. So we'll see what that does for the chemistry that was budding or has been budding over the last 2-3 games, including the almost disaster that was Saprissa for the Union out in Costa Rica. Eddie, any final thoughts before we part ways? It has been, and not that this is a final goodbye by any means, but it has been awesome to connect with you and hear more about not just Saprissa, but really the entire country of Costa Rica and the soccer that's played there.
No, you know, I do appreciate you reaching out to me and you know, all the support from the Union fans. Like I said, you guys love this competition, and you guys really seek out the knowledge more so than most fan bases. If you run into another one of us later on in the later rounds, give me a call. Like I told you, I could talk to you about San Carlos for 2 hours if you wanted to. Sadly, this little nook that I'm in New York City, this is where I spend most of my time analyzing what about 60% of the time is really dreadful. But
yeah,
you do it for that other 40% or that diamond in the rough that I start tweeting about. And then all of a sudden they're Nottingham Forest. So it's a long grind, but I do appreciate the support from everybody.
Of course. Eddie, give us your social media handles. Where can people find you? Where can people support your work? And what do you want them to do for you?
Just hit me up, CRC Football, FUTBOL, on Twitter, and sometimes on Instagram if I have the time.
Right.
Between being on the fields and coaching and then analyzing, you know, my social media game isn't on the up and up, but, you know, every now and then I try and drop some knowledge on people.
Awesome. Eddie, again, thank you so much. Really appreciate you. Best of luck tonight. I hope it's not too great for you all. And obviously a gigantic mountain for Saprissa to climb, but ultimately it'll be really fascinating to see what shakes out tonight and what happens with Vladimir. Cause like you said, if it's a 5-0 embarrassment, I think I might be finding my way to the Saprissa press conference to ask a few questions or to listen in, cause it might get a little fiery, though he's pretty good about keeping it nice and calm. I can tell that he's a very interesting character and demeanor as well. So anyhow, Eddie, thank you so much. Have a great rest and take it easy.
Thank you.